clean this shit up, but I'm listening.
Yeah.
Just
I believe we met twice a long time ago when you were
okay.
in Tear It Up and oh God, what band was it that you were in before?
Dead Nation? That's what I was in before Tear It Up.
I'm going back to like 2001.
So that would have been Tear It Up in 2001.
That would have been Tear It Up, and you did the split with Fast Times. And a good friend of mine played in Fast Times for a tour very briefly, and then they figured out that he was a terrible drummer.
His name is Brixton or something like that.
Dave Morkavage.
What tour was that?
Oh gosh, I'm trying to remember. We're talking many years and brain cells ago, but I think he played with them. Like it wasn't even like a tour. I think it was like 2 to 4 shows max,
Okay.
and he just was terrible.
That's funny. 'Cause yeah, they had a dude, I want to say his name is, I'm going to see if I can get higher up, sorry, but not as precariously sitting as it was. They had a dude who did a, I think
Uh-oh. Lost you, Dave.
a, all right, I don't know what
Okay.
happened there.
Yeah,
But now I
listen.
feel like I'm at like a regular height, right? Like this looks normal. I don't know if I need like a MySpace angle where I'm looking, it's above me.
Yeah, where
Where do you live?
I'm from the Scranton, Pennsylvania area. So
Oh.
I mean, we used to see you guys a lot back in the day. And I remember the first Planet on a Chain 7-inch came out. I remember not knowing that it was you and thinking to myself, man, that sounds like Dave from Tear It Up. And it was kind of a great surprise for me. But I have to say, like, you guys, when you were in Tear It Up, you did a lot of records, like in a pretty short span of time. But this is like you guys are compacting a lot into a very brief
You
time.
just you froze, and I don't know if it's, I mean, I have now, you're froze.
Yep, frozen. Can you hear me now? Good.
I don't know if, I mean, I'm in a room. I haven't, my computer's not moving. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, bad luck, I guess. I don't know.
Okay. Are you still in the Scranton area? So you
Yeah,
never
sadly.
left.
Oh, I
Okay.
left. I left.
Okay.
I moved to New York City, then returned. Due to my own folly, really. But
Okay.
it's home is where my mom is.
Got it.
But I'm kind of blown away by the fact that you guys got so much done in such a short period of time. I mean, how does that work for you guys, especially since you're in Texas and everyone else is pretty far away?
Yeah, they're all in Oakland, so they can all, they practice weekly, and Brian just is like a songwriting machine. And since Al joined, I think there is, I'm not sure if Al's written any songs yet, but I know that he has like written his own like leads and solos, and like there's definitely like this place is left open for Al to do something. But Brian is just like a songwriting machine. So he's kind of like always this like there's an app called like Scratch Track. So he's always like recording little bits, and then they become songs and they get worked around a little bit. So there's not a lot of like first draft is what you hear. Like he is kind of always refining it. And I'm always kind of like using the notes app on my phone to just write like song ideas. Not as much actual lyrics. Once in a while you'll get like four lines that may or may not even be in the song, but I'll write like I'll think of something, write it down, or I'll read something in a book. I read a lot. So I'll read something and make a note to like that I might not, it might not even make any sense by the time I get back to it. But or the finished song might be like pretty far from the original idea. But my notes app is still very full. So whenever Brian just drops 10 songs on me that I need to write lyrics for, I'll like panic, like I could never do this again, and then I'll do it. That's kind of how it goes every time.
You're an avid reader as well. What's your poison? Would be my question then.
So I spent, as like a non-reader, I just would basically read like music stuff. Don't do that. I would read music stuff, or I'd read like true crime. And then I kind of just got burned on it. And I really think that reading a lot of true crime like was like fucking with me. And I think it was like not healthy. So I kind of just started reading novels. I tried to do the classics for a little bit and didn't love it. I mean, I've read, I'll just like Google like 2023, like mystery or something like that, and read like relatively new books. I'll pepper it in with like the occasional nonfiction or the occasional music book. But like, I mean, I read like novels at this point. And I mean, guilty pleasure, there was all these like heist books, about a character named Parker. There's like 30 of them or something like that. There's a ton of them. I think I'm on like the 11th one, and they're like 250 page, like fast reads. So it's like, I'll read some like slog of a book about like, I've read a really, really kind of boring book about Houdini. And then I'm like, okay, well now I'll just read one of these Parker books and it'll like be a good palate cleanse. So yeah, but I mean, I kind of mix it up. As that, I don't want to just read mystery, like, you know, heisty, like crime books. I don't want to, but I mean, there's so many true crime books that at a certain point I'm like, I can't do this. And, you know, my partner is a librarian, so I try to use the library since they're a great resource for us. And, you know, I switched from a regular book to Kindle, and it you just get so much shit. And like, I don't know if you went to college, but
oh yeah, English lit, actually.
Yeah, but you can go buy your books at the college bookstore, and then they give you like $1, you know, when you bring them back. I mean, selling books to like half price books, like it's insulting. Like, so I don't have the space to just keep buying, you know, 50 books a year somewhere. And, you know, so the books I end up buying at this point are some like small press stuff just to like support the artist, and some punk photo type books that you want to read in like a sitting and then keep for some reason.
Oh yeah, I mean, I still have like that Reflections on Straight Edge book that came out back like, what, oh, yeah. Am I gonna ever read it again? But the fact that it sits on my shelf, just like the like legitimately thousands of records I own at this point, I have an attachment to it. It's weird.
How often do you reread books, though?
There are certain novels that I reread once a year religiously. There are others that I will read once and never pick up again. It has to be something that it's weird. I would have had to have read it when I was a teenager, and it would have had to really do something intrinsic to my being. Like a lot of Clive Barker's early novels, I tend to reread every couple years, like a Magicka. And there are these like large sweeping, like vile and sexually perverse novels. But I first read them when I was like 12, 13, 14 years old. I was not absorbing them in the correct manner when I was that age.
Yeah. So
every couple of years I do go back to them and
reread them stem to stern. I haven't reread that many books in my life. That's the thing. Like, that's another reason why I'm like, why am I keeping all these books? Like at one point, probably in like 2004, the girl I was dating, we broke up, and I basically lost all my books. And it was a lot of like, there's a couple books I rebought. I mean, it wasn't like we got in some like crazy fight and she like, you know, but it was just like, I moved out. And then I just like didn't get, I took my records, took my clothes and like some of my stuff. That's just like, I'll get this other stuff later. And I just never got it. But then like, the amount of books that, like, so some of those books I lost back then, I rebought, some of which I reread, some of which I bought and just still haven't reread. Because I, you know, when am I going to read Lords of Chaos again? But, you know,
right,
one day I will.
I think something like Lords of Chaos, though, or Reflections on Straight Edge, all that all ages book, at the very least, we could go back and read passages like, wait, who was it that killed the guy in the park again? Lords of Chaos, you know what I mean? And at least that there's that resource. And take into consideration that movie that just came out a couple years ago. Be like, that's not like the book, see?
But I read that book in a pre-streaming world.
Mm-hmm.
So like there's a lot of that stuff that you'd never hear, and I wasn't gonna try to buy those records. And you know, reading music books, like the last music book I read was this book called like Major Labels that kind of gives like a blurb on a few different genres. It makes you kind of curious about certain aspects to like, well, maybe I do want to listen to like this James Brown record or something like that. All right. I'm going to let my dog out of the room because now he's just like, why did you bring me in here?
Yeah.
Get out of here. There you go. But that's one of those things about rereading books that like, especially with music books, like I'll find myself listening to like, you know, a little bit of a song to be like, oh, like now I'm like sort of inspired by it, or reading books. I mean, like that song Cocolero to do shameless plugs, like that was based off of reading a book that kind of, it was like a super trashy book about like, hiring in my mental image, it was like Gran Torino era, like Clint Eastwood, like to try to stop cocaine. But also it was like super hokey, but also reading a book about the illegal like gold trade. And, you know, so like the combination of those two things is what I made one cohesive thought about. Because one of them was pretty hokey, but one of them, I mean, it is just a lot of like people who are like just taken advantage of to make someone else super rich. And there's, you'll find that in drugs, you'll find that in diamonds, you'll find that in gold, you'll find that in a lot of, you know, big money ticket items. There's not like some guy who, not the guy who digs up, who works in a mine is not then like getting in his Maserati at the end of the day.
Yeah. And I
don't know why that was the first fancy car I thought of, but yeah.
But if you think about it, I mean, for the most part, unless you really love your vocation, that's, we're all a part of that, I guess, in a way. But a lot of those luxury items, there's blood on all of it. And that's,
yeah,
I think that's probably a big part of why I became like a vegetarian and a vegan when I was a kid, because of the fur industry and how horrific that was. But it seems to me that only the morally bereft place the dollar amount on these items that they would blow that kind of money on. Whereas I look at it as opulent and disgusting.
I mean, I don't think it's like a punk cliche that like, I legit don't care about money. You know, like I recently changed jobs and everyone's like, oh, like, congratulations, or, you know, oh, like, you know, getting out of here, getting more money. I'm like, I'm actually not making more money. I'm actually like took a pay cut because like, I don't give a shit. Mm-hmm. You know, like I haven't gotten my first check yet, but like, I assume I'll be able to get by, you know, I assume I'll be able to keep the lights on and keep paying for the house and doing all the things I need to do. But I think if you, unless you've got like, you know, like a bunch of kids or like some sort of, you know, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory style, like invalid parents you have to maintain, like, I don't, if you hate your job, then don't do it. You know, there's so much life that you have to lead, and there's so much of your time is spent at work. Like, I just don't, if you hate it and you don't need to, like, get out of there. I mean, I was trying to get another job for like a year and a half before I finally got this other job. But, you know, like, I spent time just trying to only really go for jobs that I could do. Like, I'm not trying to, like, once again, I'm not a bullshitter. So I'm not going to try to get a job that I'll be bad at. Right. But I want a work-life balance, and I want to just be able to, like, go to work and then fucking go home, you know?
So that's a pretty mean feat in this day and age.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
To tell you the truth, I feel the exact same way. The only reason I aspire to any sort of financial gain is because of my children mm-hmm. and my wife. Otherwise, like, left to my own devices, I would legitimately do what I had to get by and write and make music, because that's mm-hmm. that's currency to me.
Yeah,
it's obviously currency to you. If you, I mean, obviously, look, that's, there's something about that means more. And I think not just culturally, but spiritually, like, I have a spiritual connection to music that can't really be transferred financially or mm-hmm. in any manner. I would like to think that that's probably why you're still making music and playing in hardcore bands all these years later, mm-hmm. because it's fulfilling something and you're tapping into something. Do you think you could kind of, like, spell that out for me in any kind of way?
I mean, I want to release. I want, like, that catharsis from being able to play. Like, I'm not some crazy introvert, but I also don't think that I want to, like, entertain, so to speak. You know, like, I don't think of myself as that kind of, like, extrovert. I just don't give it, like, if you need me to make a speech, I will. And it's not because I want the attention. I just don't care about, I don't have that, like, nervousness about talking in front of people or crowds or any of that. I like playing shows, though. And it's not a matter of, like, I mean, Play on the Chain is not a band that, like, everyone, like, knows the lyrics to or anything. It's not like it's some, you know, crazy, like, ego trip, you know. It's just, I think it's fun. And I mean, none of the band, if you really think about it, no band I've ever done has been, like, huge, you know, like,
beloved. Yes. But
sure. But, like, I wasn't, like, making any money. I wasn't, like, it wasn't, like, my job. It wasn't, I did, you know, it was fun, you know, but, you know, I've done other bands that couldn't get arrested, you know?
Right.
And it's for me, like, I don't, like, think about the art, so to speak, but, like, I do enjoy making flyers. I do enjoy writing lyrics. I do enjoy jumping around and yelling, you know. I can't do anything else. Like, I can't sing, you know, I can't play any instruments. Like, I'm not saying I'm opposed to people that, like, do other genres of music. I'm not sitting here just listening to hardcore with my time. But I can't do anything else. So I've never, other than I did this band Pagan Rituals for a little bit, that was more, like, slower, like, punker. I don't want to say gothy, because I don't know, but it was, like, darker.
Yeah.
But, like, that's, it's still, you could put it on. It's definitely still me singing in it, because I can't do anything but one thing.
I think people, the people who enjoy it, though, really enjoy it, and mm-hmm. it speaks to a certain kind of person. I listen to all the Planet on a Chain stuff. I think of, not like Nardcore bands, I think of Infest, I think of mm-hmm. Youth of Today. To me, it's not just one sound, one style. And I know this new record is even more varied from what I've read about it thus far. I haven't gotten to hear any advanced copies yet, mm-hmm. but to me, there's a lot of sphere of influence around this band that's not just like, we're a youth crew band, we're this revival band. To me, it's an amalgamation of everything that you've all sort of enjoyed over the past however many decades. And it's not in, like, an intentional, we're going to do this song this time. It just all kind of happens the way it happens.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that it sounds... Yeah, I mean, I don't think that it, like, sounds like these are rejected Talk Is Poison songs, or these are thrown away Look Back and Laugh songs. And, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I think it sounds like yeah, this is what like what we're writing. And like Brian is older than me, and Brian is still like buying new records and like listening to stuff. Like I am still like checking out stuff in Bandcamp, and like I don't buy nearly as much. Like I got asked today about like record stores, and I hate that I'm not hitting record stores as much at this point. Like I'm generally not buying old stuff, and I'm generally like buying directly from labels. Like I'm gonna just like order stuff from Bandcamp or order stuff. Well, generally Bandcamp is like how you like get the like, oh, because you bought this Iron Lung record, like here's another one, or you know, you bought this from Convulse, here's more. So like there is, yeah, I still am getting new records in the mail. I'm still like we did those four shows with Destiny Bond, and then like I like ordered records from bands we played with just because I didn't want to carry them then, but I wanted them. I just didn't want to like figure out how to like get them back home on like a Southwest flight. But I mean, I personally, like, I'm game to like talk about old shit and talk about, I saw this band or I didn't see that band or whatever. If you want to talk about like 80s records that I, you know, I clearly didn't see those bands, but like, I like love some of the music for sure. But I also, I don't want to just like live in the past. Like, I don't like, I appreciate what you said about Tear It Up and things like that. But at the same point, like, I don't want to just be like, you should buy my current band because I did a band you liked 20 years ago. Not the you in general. You know, like, I get it that labels and promoters and people need anything to sell something. So they are going to put the ex-members of stuff. But like, you know, did you hear like Martin from Los Crudos' like most recent band? You know, I listened to it and didn't know it was him because he sings kind of different on it until you get through it. And there's the song that he talks. And I'm like, well, that's Martin's talking voice. Like I've heard him talk plenty. Yep. And then he's like, you know, this, you know, I listened to this whole record. That's like near the end of it. I was just listening to new music. I didn't know it was like the dude from Los Crudos' current band. It was just like, yeah, this is cool. And oh, look at that. It's a dude I know, you know, it's a dude who's like, music. It's a band that I drove from New Jersey to Michigan to go see, you know, like,
yeah.
And it's like, yeah, it's him. That dude's old, way older than me, still just like doing new shit and doing shit that doesn't sound like Limprist, that doesn't sound like Needles, that doesn't sound those like crude. So like, he's not just doing the same thing he's always done. And that's, if I could do more with my stupid voice, I would do more, but you know.
But it's, I'm glad you mentioned that, you made that statement, because the way I found Planet on a Chain, it wasn't like no one told me. I didn't know. I heard, oh, this is a great 7-inch. I got it. And then I figured out it was you. I already liked it. And I made this statement with, I was talking to Damian Moyle from Mass Friends Rust, and we both agreed there is as much great hardcore and punk happening now than back in 1988, back in 1993, or whatever heyday someone thinks they had. I don't think I have any sort of claim staked on any sort of like scene coolness, because I'm an old guy. I'm just an old guy. I happen to be there at the time.
Yeah.
But
come on, no one's really putting that much shine on 93 though, right? That was a dark time.
It depends on the Victory Records set. They really loved that era. Anyone who says that, I just say dead guy and move on, because they were the one, but they were the heirs of Rorschach's throne, so I was gonna like that. But
I did not like dead guy at the time,
really,
because I was like, I mean, I saw them, but I was like punk as shit, so like it was not what I wanted. I, you know, like I didn't see Rorschach, but I don't think I would have liked it. Hearing it like as like a 19-year-old or whatever, like it makes sense. But I think hearing it, if I, you know, heard it at 14, I wouldn't have cared for it. Unless, well, you know,
yeah, that makes sense, especially if you were more on the punk end of the spectrum. But
I was. See, I mean, like, I like Resurrection more now in 2024 than I did in 1994.
Actually, so do I. But, you know, I mean, there was the whole Krishna thing, and you know.
No, but I mean, I bring this up whenever I can. I have no stake in Death Wish or there's a little bit of New Jersey pride, so to speak. But like when Death Wish did the reissue of the Resurrection discography, and they like actually got it mastered correctly. Like if you didn't care for it in the early 90s, like I recommend people like go back to it because it's cool and it makes sense and it sounds good. Whereas like the New Age version sounded like shit.
Oh yeah, it definitely did. But when Death Wish put that all together, it really was kind of it was a different life for it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people bitch about that sort of thing too, like, oh, you took away this, and no, I'm sorry. You clean up the mix, it's great. Thank God, yeah. I can hear it.
if you want to complain about like Still Psycho after all these years and like other funny, like when bands re-record records, but like they just cleaned it up. It's not like it's not even like Chain of Strength where they threw the like True Till Death at the beginning of it or took out the drum intro. Like mm-hmm. this is just a cleaned up version of like the original thing.
I think right now in this generation, these kids, like the kids my daughter's age, my daughter's 23, mm-hmm. I think they're making some of the most interesting music the genre has ever seen. A lot of them, you know? And I celebrate that because I got to a point, you know, maybe in my late 20s where I just stopped giving a shit for a little while. And I just listened mm-hmm. to the old stuff because it was dark times. I was starting to really feel like, man, I don't see eye to eye with this anymore. It doesn't feel like me. And then about 8-10 years ago, it started to really kind of get good again.
Yeah.
And I feel great about that. I don't ever want to be the person who's like, back in my day, because I hated it when guys, when I started going to shows, would say shit like that. I think it's a better world all the way around, personally.
I think there's ebbs, for me, there's ebbs and flows of like my finger on the pulse or my like real interest in it. And there was never like, other than the pandemic, there was never like a period of time where I like didn't go to shows for a long period of time. I mean, I lived in Tulsa for a year, and even there, I probably went to like 6 shows that year. And that includes like, I drove to St. Louis twice. I went to Oklahoma City a couple of times. You know, like I drove far because like I don't know that I went to 5 shows in Tulsa, you know, mm-hmm. Maybe 5. But that I'll include like seeing like DRI at a rock club or like working a Cannibal Corpse show. But like for the most part, you know, like, yeah, I mean, there's periods of time where I'll get more into things or not. It just also depends on like what's going on, you know, as far as what's coming through or what's popular enough that like it tours to keep you motivated. But I do agree that like the last few years right now, like there's a lot going on and there's kind of something for everyone in the best way and not in a way that like it's nothing means anything, but like, you know, if you want to go see like Disclosed Worship, you can. If you want to go see like kind of like Buzzbin 120 Minutes bands, you can. If you want just like this weird aspect of the peace comp, you can. You know, like there's a lot out there. I mean, I think it's tough to say that you could just like buy everything from even any label, because I think there's wild cards on that everyone put, they know not everything's for me, but yeah, there's still stuff I really like coming out, and there's like bands that I will travel to go see. There's band, like as a 44 year old, if I'm going to go see my family because they're still on the East Coast, I'm going to make sure there's something I want to go see.
Oh yeah.
You know, cause why not, you know?
Especially in Jersey, my God, I mean, the scene was always like, there were dark times there too, but we went to Jersey a lot from the Scranton area to go to shows. I mean,
yeah,
God, we used to go to the Bouncing Souls house to shows when I was a kid, a pretty young guy.
67 Handy Street.
Yep. Go see Pedro. I love that guy. But there was always something happening in New Jersey. There was always something happening in this part of Pennsylvania, strangely. And then like New York and Philly were right in that special area where it's 2 hours north to New York, 2 hours south to Philly, or you can just shoot over to Jersey and you could be there in like an hour, maybe. It was a great area and a great time. But I think, you know, with the exception of a couple little things, it's much better. It's so much better. I think that what you guys are doing right now is actually almost you're fulfilling an itch that I don't think was really being scratched by all of the new bands that I really like now, because it's actually angrier, I think, than most of the stuff that's happening now. You still got it in that area.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm still mad, you know, mm-hmm. I'm still wound up that way. And that's like, I that's why I do it, you know, in the sense that like, it's, if I don't do it for long, I'll get fucking stir crazy. Like I need the catharsis, so to speak. I need the release. So, and like, I don't want to write "I hate myself" lyrics. I'd rather turn it around, and I'll turn it around to either write about a fictitious you that may actually be "I hate myself" lyrics that I just made it about, wrote it like a third person, or just find something else to be mad about. Like there's plenty of injustice, or there's plenty of like fucked up shit. And I think as much as we could talk about how great punk is right now, like, I think the world's terrible.
Well, that's why punk is so great right now, because the world, for as much as, and I say this in all honesty, I think the younger people, there's outliers, but I think a majority of them are getting really, really cool in this day and age, because they're accepting of so many more human conditions that certainly would have been more than frowned upon when we were younger. The kids are just cooler. Society for the youth culture is, I think, a lot more accepting. As a direct result of that, all of the geriatrics who are in our government are, if they're on the right, they're getting worse. And other countries, sadly, there's a lot to be desired. There's a lot of terrible things going on. I don't know how these kids have it in them, with all of the external pressure of the strife in the world and the strife in our government, to still have that mindset to be accepting and to put that foot forward. I don't know how much experience you have with younger people currently, but they're impressive.
Yeah. I mean, I recently changed jobs, so now I feel like I'm mostly working with like older people. I mean, not like, I'm not working with nearly as many young people as I did in my previous role. And yeah, I mean, I think it's cool that people can just be like, kind of like let their freak flag fly and just like, this is how I want to be. And that's accepted. I mean, I'm in Austin, so I'm in like a weird liberal bubble in Texas. So I get it that like, you know, kids are bullied literally to death in the state directly to my north. But there's a lot of people that are just like, this is how I want to be. And I think, as I mentioned, like being like capital P punk as like a teenager, like, you know, I went to my like 10-year high school reunion. Clearly this is a long time ago, and it wasn't fun. That's a little quick side note, but, I thought it would be funny, and I like got it there and I was like, I regret this immediately. I remember having someone to come talk to me there and just be like, I thought it was really cool how you like just could just do what you want to do and like just didn't let people bother you. And I'm like, thank you. I don't know. I didn't think I was like doing anything super brave just being like punk, you know, but I guess there are people that like, I mean, you can interact with people that like still like live with their roommate when it's like, yo, you can be out. I hope, you know, I hope that you accept that, yo, it's 2024. Like, I hope that you can just admit that, like, who you are, and it's like, shouldn't be, people should fucking accept you.
Yeah.
And I bet, but you know, easy for, I'm a fucking straight white male, so easy for me to say all this shit, but you know, yeah. I mean, I still think that I hope that people can continue to like just fucking be who they are. And like, I think that there are, you know, Jell, that's like their whole deal is so much just like, man, just like fucking hardcore for the freaks. And like, it's true. You know, I don't want to see like little fucking Hitler youth, you know, like carbon copy anything. You know, I think you should just like, it should be a fucking diverse crowd. Like, we just did those four shows with Destiny Bond, and like their audience was fucking great. It was like just like people that were just like fucking being themselves and like not feeling like they had to fit into any fucking set of rules or little bubble. And it was like, yeah, these kids are fucking cool. And like, I'm glad that they could watch these old men jump around too, you know, but they, you know, I think it was way more fun to like play to like that crowd four nights in a row.
And that whole, I used to say this, so that's where I'm getting it from, but I remember playing in hardcore bands in my early 30s and saying to my bandmates, who were all in my general age group, like, we're the weird old guys at the show now, aren't we? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't even think that's a thing anymore either.
Well, that's a weird thing, is that I remember being in my mid 20s, like early 20s, and they're being like, oh, this is like goes out to people that have like been around for 10 years, and being like, oh, that's crazy. You know, or like, that person's 30, that's insane, you know? And it's like, no, that's like, and I don't know if that's good, that like, they're people, I mean, bands don't break up anymore. And like, there's a lot of people that are still like the scene has gotten older. But I think in the last few years, like last five, if not less, it's like gotten young again. And I think that's great. And if I'm a fucking dinosaur that gets fucking walks out into the ocean to die, like fucking good, you know, like I'm okay with that, you know. I mean, I'm not doing it to like make it or anything, but like I just like doing it. But I'm glad that it's not just a bunch of people that look like me.
But in the same token, although it is youth culture, the music is still so new, relatively speaking, that who's to say a band in their 40s and 50s couldn't be the next thing, the next evolution of hardcore and punk. It was supposed to be about not having a set prescribed rule that, okay, mm-hmm. you have to be this, you have to do that. And I think that's probably one of the more inspiring aspects of your signing to Revelation for me, because it's like, yeah, they're still relevant. Like these guys are relevant. They're happening right now. That's not a rehash of anything. That's why you're signed to Revelation. That's why you're touring and playing shows with these younger bands, because that age thing, it's meaningless at this point. It really yeah. is. It really fucking is. You're still pissed. You still have things to say. And in my opinion, you're doing the best music of your career.
I think so.
Hands
too.
Down. Yeah. Hands fucking yeah. down.
Yeah, I think that, and I'm not trying to just do full like Iron Maiden syndrome where you're like, the newest record's the best one we've ever done. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, I don't think it's like phoned in. And I do think that like, if someone's like, oh, what do your bands sound like? You're tell me, old man, like tell me about touring in 2000. I'm going to be like, listen to the newest thing I did, mm-hmm. listen to that, you know? And it's, I'd much rather like, I'm never going to be like, oh yeah, I used to be somebody, like check out fucking this record from 24 years ago. That's never what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell them to check out Boxed In, and you know, whenever Culture of Death comes out, mm-hmm. I'll tell them to do that. Cause like, yeah, I mean, this also a little side note for me, personal victory. I feel like this is my first real second LP. Cause I think Deprogrammed, debatably, it's kind of on the fence if I count it, because it is re-recorded songs from the first two demos, which mm-hmm. came out as 7 inches. But like lots of bands re-record their demos to be on their real record. But gray area aside, Culture of Death is like entirely. And there's the we did a comp track, which we did two versions of. There's a Bay Area comp track that is also, that song is also on Culture of Death, but otherwise entirely new songs. But Tear It Up didn't do two LPs. Dead Nation didn't do two LPs. So it's my splitting headache or obedience. Like, no one did two full LPs. So from, this old man did something new for himself.
I mean, there has to be a part of you that's like, my God, I'm on Revelation Records.
Oh, for sure. Because yeah,
that,
I mean,
that are in the, with the black star and the gold box. I mean, that meant something. Like, that was when I was a kid, I used to like lie and say I was on free lunch so I could take my parents' lunch money and order from Revelation when they were still in New York. Mm-hmm. By yeah. 7 inches. Like, it was, it,
there's the times where something bad happens in your life and you're like, oh, I guess I'm not a sociopath. And there's times when you're like, oh, I'm like really excited to be, to get like the test press and my a Revelation Records t-shirt in the mail, you know, because like, oh yeah, here's your record, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, that feels good, you know. That's to see my stuff in like the like email ad, like, oh, pre-order the record, like from the like email you get from Revelation for like with your fun fact and all that, like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I felt super cool about it. Like, the biggest label that I've ever been on is the, you know, the band I'm doing now, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, we played a show. Well, we didn't play a show, but we were on a show in LA when we were supposed to do three shows with Gorilla Biscuits. My flight got delayed 8 hours. So I did not make it to the show. But Jordan was there. So I'd be like, hey, thank you for putting us out. And thank you for Revelation Records. That was my only time meeting him, but you know, it's funny little things like that, but like, after all, you know, being in punk for so long, to be like, here's like a milestone.
That's one of my dreams. I know it's never going to happen for me because I'm, it's just not going to, but man, I'm actually happy for you due to it. But I have to wonder, like you said, when you were younger, it was punk with a capital P. But one thing that I always sort of ask people in one way or another, musicians, I ask them, what was the first record you bought on your own? When it doesn't matter what, you know, genre, whatever it was, but that first love, that first hit of adrenaline, you know?
Well, I mean, I was like a child of heavy metal first.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I was like, I mean, the first like tape I got was like Slippery When Wet, you know. Nice. Like, I'm from New Jersey and a hair metal dude. So like, I went the journey of just like cock rock, but also like punk style completist. Like, when I met Matt, who was in Dead Nation, we met in like 90 when we were like little kids. And you know, telling him that like my favorite band was like Whitesnake. Mm-hmm. And him going to my house and being like, whoa, this dude has like 11 Whitesnake tapes. Like, it's not like, oh, he just like, oh, like Steve Vai is in the band, they just put out Slip of the Tongue or whatever. It's like, no, like he has like the fucking blues records and shit, like when they were trying to be Led Zeppelin. But I mean, there's like, you know, want a funny record? This is a good funny thing. When this record came out, so this is a funny like spiky hair punk compilation. It's from like 94. It was like, this isn't like England in 1982 or 1983. Like, this is bands from New Jersey, New York, and Connecticut. You know, like current bands that are like punk, and there's like, they don't all sound the same. Like, you know, they don't all like the Casualties, but also there's like the Piss weren't punk looking, you know, like the Bristles were like old men, like, you know, yeah. Like, It was a little bit of everything. And like I do Let It Rock in Montclair, New Jersey, which is not convenient. I was like 15 or some shit. I couldn't drive. I feel like the second time I went there, I bought Pogo Tech. It might have been the first time I went there, I bought Pogo Tech. And like a blank 77 7-inch. And like the next time I went, I bought like the first Casualty 7-inch. Like I just kept being like, well, I already have this. Like now I got to buy the, and like, it just like opened up a, like, I've got to get all the records by these bands that are on here. And then you just like, you people in the mid and early 90s love splits. So you just keep getting like, and if you're a kid who's only can buy 2 7-inches or whatever, you're like, you want to get your money's worth. So you're going to buy comps and things like that to like hear more stuff. I mean, that's just a funny record that I just thought about pulling out because I knew it would be right next to me.
I just saw Chad from Blanks like 4 days ago. I see.
Does he live there?
Yeah. Yeah. I see Chad all the time because I went to school for English lit, but I'm a plumber.
Okay.
Because that's about all I can do. And he works for Simplex Grinnell / Johnson Controls. He works on fire suppression systems. And mm-hmm. the place I work, he's there all the time doing stuff. And yeah, I've known him fucking forever. But my God, it's funny how people from that world, we end up in like the straight world, but it's still like, dude, you're still that guy. And he's still, they still play.
So I was in, so as I mentioned, I will time visiting family. So my dad's in pretty rough shape. So I was out there last, maybe. And while I was there, I saw Poison Ruin twice and I saw High Viz. It was like when High Viz was playing New York. Mm-hmm. And Mike Blank was at the High Viz show. I heard his voice. Like I recognized his voice. So I went up to him like, hey, Mike. Zero hesitation. He's like, hey, Dave. It's like, yo, I bet you I haven't seen that dude. At that point, I'm like, probably haven't seen you in 25 years. Easy. He's like, when was the last time I saw you? I'm like, I don't know. But I bet you it was before 1998, you know? like, yeah, I knew if you could explain who I was to Chad, he would know who I am because I was much friendlier with Mike, Renee, Tim, Chad being my fourth friend, so to speak, of the dudes in that band. But like when I was 15, 16, I was seeing the Blanks or the Casualties like every weekend. And then just kind of got crustier going to ABC No Rio, going to Stog 13, and then Dead Nation started. So I was then just like doing that, but also like playing shows. And then basically from 98 to 2003 did bands. So I was like doing stuff. So after Tear It Up broke up, I kind of like paused, but yeah, I don't know, kind of a digression, but like with like the spiky punk stuff, there was like records that meant like a ton to me. There was, but then you get into more, I mean, I'll still listen to like, I'll still throw on like random crust records. Like I still fucking like love Nausea. I still love like the 84, 85, like anarcho, like stuff that's a little bit later. Like I think the Anti-Sect album holds up. I think there's so much UK, like I love Amoebix. Like there's some of that stuff that like means so much to me, you know, like I could, you know, like this'll, you know, shatter it, but like I don't have like a crazy record collection because mm-hmm. I moving across country and everything, like I sold a lot of stuff, but like not like I have 2 crates of records, which also contains a lot of like newer stuff. You know, I still have the Pogo Attack comp that I bought in 1995, you know, like I still have weird stuff that like when I sold all my stuff, I didn't want to have like, oh, here's the most expensive records I ever owned, you know, like it'll have some expensive records, but it'll have like the second from Ashes Rise 7-inch, you know, it'll have like the Piss 7-inch, you know, it'll have records that just like meant a lot to me and still do, you know, that I want to keep. And like, it's not, because I mean, like some of that shit, like I've rebought some records just to like have, because I like sold them because I just really needed money or got badgered into it or just like had to like cut the cord. Like, if I'm going to keep this, like, you know, like I can't keep everything. Like, I, you know, I never had a kid's leather say, so it's like, am I going to hold out to like record that even, you know, even let's be honest, 15 years ago was too expensive for me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that it's just like, all right, I'll break up an Exclaim collection because I'll just never fill that hole. You know, and that's, it's, you know, I still have a Jerry's Kids LP over there, but
now you could get like multiple copies of The Kids Will Have Their Say.
I could, yeah. But I mean, I still have my like weird copies of the Jerry's Kids LP that like whoever owned the insert like hung it on their wall. So it has like, some, they wrote the band's name and it's like cut in half. Because why it was cut in half, I don't know. But I assume they cut it in half so they could post, because there's like pinholes in it. So whoever wanted to hang this like shitty collage did it. But yeah, I mean, like, what am I going to sell this? I mean, I could, you know, it's an Exclaim record. It's not like it's worth nothing, but like, you know, there's, I'd rather just have some of this stuff. But I can't keep it all. And the people that kept it all, kudos to you. I've sold
some pretty, I guess, impressive stuff. If you want to consider dollar values, but I mean, I can say in all honesty, I have over 4,000 records and I really, really love all those records, but I don't listen to all of them. So am I going to sell them eventually? Yeah, it's coming. It's coming sooner than I'd like to admit, but.
Cause I mean, I had points in my life where I listened to, like, that was my main way of listening to music, mm-hmm. was records, you know? And now, I mean, it's just like, convenience on your phone and shit like that, or you know, through like a Bluetooth speaker while you're like doing dishes or making dinner or something like that. That, you know, I mean, I'll come in here and listen. Like, I still enjoy the feeling of like sitting in a chair or listening to an LP and like reading the lyrics and like taking in the whole thing. But I don't have enough hours in the day to just like sit in this room as I do have hours to like be sitting at work and having music playing there.
I think a lot of my, as much as records like legitimately do sound better in a way, I think a lot of that has to do with nostalgia for me. It's not a cool thing because now it's, records are cool again now, but when I was a kid, that's what was around, that's what I could afford, because mm-hmm. records were actually cheaper than CDs. So I would buy the record and I had all the time in the world. I was a kid and I had headphones on because my father mm-hmm. flipped the fuck out if he heard what I was listening to. So mm-hmm. You have this little experience. It's tactile. It's a connection. I don't have that kind of time on my hands anymore either. So it's fleeting, but when I get to do it, it's special.
But yeah, but you're not going to like, if you're going to go do plumber work, you're not going to like bring a turntable with you.
Fuck no.
You could bring a job box if you want, you know, or you just fucking put on headphones, probably. I mean, I don't know if you probably could. I have no idea if you need to have your senses around you, but.
Yeah, you do, sadly.
Yeah. I mean, I now have, like, office-y jobs. You know, when I first, like, my last job, when I first got it, I really tried to, like, listen to like lighter shit at work just out of like, what if someone walks in my office, mm-hmm. you know? And then I just didn't get, I slowly, like, I just don't give a shit. Like, you know, like I'll listen to like a death metal record. If someone walks in, I'm still going to pause it. Mm-hmm. I think they don't care. I just started a new job, so I haven't quite figured out. I haven't figured out my music listening yet, because I'm actively like learning how to do my job, so I kind of can't. But yeah, I mean, I listen to I listen to music like every day because I'm whether it be, while doing house shit or whether it be at the gym or I don't know. Like, I haven't had a real commute in a while, also, as a real like weird brag. Like, I lived like a mile from my job for that I just did the last 14 years, and
That must be nice.
now my commute's 2 miles. So, really, I doubled my commute. But yeah, I took a pay cut and doubled my commute. But it still took me like 11 minutes to ride my bike there. So it's really not a big deal.
So was
But
that
yeah.
like was that a mental health move on your part then? Because it was a pay cut and you doubled that precarious 2 mile
Yes,
commute.
100%, 100%.
Okay.
Yeah. I just need to change. I've worked in the animal welfare industry since 2008, and now I don't. So now, that just I couldn't do it anymore. It's too much.
Well, maybe you should talk me out of it because my wife and I are starting a rescue.
Okay. What are you trying to rescue?
Dog, like domestic animals to begin with, dogs, cats.
Huh.
We're going to buy a farm eventually and rescue horses as well because it just so happens in this area, very rural, and people do have a tendency to buy animals and then just surrender them for no good reason. They need a place to go. We just need to find a way to make it not financially solvent because that's impossible, but get some help anyway.
Yeah, I mean there's things you can do to test your emotional fortitude as far as like getting like pregnant dogs from a shelter per se and fostering them until those puppies are 8 weeks old or whatever and then adopting them out. You could do that probably I don't really know, but you could do that probably through your local shelter, which may give you some degree of finance. They might help you as far as like food and stuff, supplies, medical stuff. And you
But
might have like
we're
a
fostering two now that they help us out with, as a matter of fact.
dog that was in here earlier was a foster fail. I have another foster fail downstairs. I had one successful foster. But I've had two dogs for the last more than 10 years. In some capacity or another, when my one dog passed, my partner had a dog, so we both entered the relationship with a dog, so we had those two. Then that dog died, so we had one for a little bit, fostered Bon Me, the dog that was in here. My old pit died, so then we had one dog for a little bit, fostered one successfully, fostered one and kept her. Yeah, so I never had like a crazy madhouse of dogs. Never had more than two, but
We have four and we have four dogs and three cats in the house right now that are ours. Everything else is fosters, but it's probably insane what we're doing currently.
People do it all the time. I think a thing I would tell people, the same way that I think that you, the individual, shouldn't like despise your work because you should just do something else because it's just gonna be like it's gonna be bad for your like soul. I think if your animals become a burden on you and you start to resent them for what you have to do, it's bad for you and it's probably bad for them because they probably can sense it in some degree that like they're not bringing you joy. So like I mean this country every shelter's full that isn't a kill shelter. There's whether it be the economy, what particular thing you want to blame it on. There's a fuckload of dogs and cats out there. And there's not even if for everyone that like wants to get pets, like there's plenty of people that don't. And there's plenty of people that like get a dog and then like get pregnant, or they like have like a 2-year-old and get a dog at the same time. It's like that dog's not going to get like the time of day from you. I think you, the individual, should get a dog if you like want to be there for it. I mean,
yeah,
cats are another story. You can kind of,
they're like furniture.
Yeah, I mean, like you can be there for a cat and really be like doing 25%, and they're like, perfect, that's what I want.
The dog, I mean, you have to be home.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, I got my old pit in 2009, and to me that was like such a crazy cramp in my style. Like that was like responsibility, real responsibility for the first time in my life. And it, you know, becomes a drag at points where you're like, you can't immediately just like go out and do the thing. Like my current situation, my partner and I, it's hard for us to travel together because we have to like figure out what to do with two dogs.
Yeah.
You know, I talked to someone recently that spent like an ignorant amount of money on their dog when they went on that's another couple when they went out of town. It's just like, really, that you paid more than I would pay, especially if you have a bunch.
Yeah.
You know, it can get crazy. And I'm someone who values like experiencing life and doing stuff. For being like a straight edge vegan, like I do want to live life. So I think it's having like, for us, it's like, it can be challenging to like not be the person in a relationship that does all the travel. And you don't want your partner, like my partner did two different trips without me, one solo, one with another friend. And like, yeah, I mean, like I don't want them to just sit home while I go like tour or go, even I have friends that I'll travel with too. Because you know, like there are people that I've known for 20 years that we're still friends. We want to like go do nature shit. But I mean, I'll never not have a dog, you know, that's still at the end of the day. Like I get it that might've sounded like a PSA on not getting pets, but I'll always do it, you know, and I'll keep doing it. You know, I wouldn't get into large animal. That seems like I just don't have, I mean, I grew up in North Jersey and then I never had horses. I don't know shit about that.
Well, my wife always did, apparently. But I couldn't not have a dog. I couldn't not at this point in my life.
Yeah, agreed. I did animal control for like 10 years. And when I would have to do horse stuff, it's like, I don't know shit about horses. Like, I didn't grow up with this shit. Like, having to like drive a trailer and stuff like that. It's like, I didn't have like a boat as a kid. And I didn't go... I didn't have any, like, I learned how to do this, like, when I drove a trailer from New Jersey to Oklahoma when I moved, and I had to tow my car, and all my possessions, but, like, I don't know, but, like, I think that shit's, I'll take a pack of dogs any day of the week over dealing with a horse. Wow. I have it right now.
They're easier, well, maybe not from your point of view, because you were dealing with it from a whole different angle, but they're actually, it's like a big dog, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Dog, you can kick your face off, you know, like, I don't know.
Oh, they can kill you for sure.
Oh yeah. 100%. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how many horse related deaths there are a year, but I don't want to find out.
I witnessed four lifetimes so far.
Yeah. Watch someone get killed by
they ride on what's called a sulky. It's a two-wheeled bike type thing that hangs off the back of the horse instead of riding on the horse. And sometimes if there's an accident, their ankle will get hung up in one of the straps for the sulky, and the guys get drugged to death. And I've witnessed that four times.
That's rather alarming.
Yeah, it's vicious. It's vicious.
I mean, because of doing animal control, I've seen plenty of dead bodies, but they're usually been dead for a bit when I get there. So that's wild.
Yeah. 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 But thankfully I'm not intimately involved with that aspect of the business. I just happen to be there as it occurs. I could totally imagine why getting away from doing animal control would be pertinent to your mental health.
I mean, I got out of animal control during the pandemic, August 2020. I switched jobs, and then I was over all the vet techs. So I was supervisor of vet services for 3 years, 3 years and change. Like I said, it's whatever it is, February 2024. And so August 2020 to February 24, I did vet services. And I did private practice vet tech shit in New Jersey, Oklahoma, and when I first moved to Texas. So I did it for, but that was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So it was like a, did it. So, I mean, I have, but I mean, I was doing like shit and money shit and hiring, you know, talent acquisition or whatever the hell, you know, I was doing boss shit, not like setting catheters.
Right.
You know,
Thank God.
I was never good at that. You know, if you want me to, I can get blood, but I'm not good at setting catheters. Even when I was like a full-time vet tech, I was never good at it.
I don't think I'd want to be good at that. But kind of to go back to the new record, because I don't think we talked enough about it, and I want to plug it at least enough. You know what I mean? Because I know it's going to be amazing. Not only from what I've read, it's going to be a bit more varied musically, but also the appearance of it, vastly dissimilar from the way
on the cover. It's not. Yeah, I didn't make the cover of this one.
You didn't make the cover. Yeah. The way the band's name is written out on the front is almost somewhere between crust punk and death metal in appearance. Yeah.
It's musically not, but yeah, it does have like a much like your metal-ier look. But like it's definitely sad. Like maybe it'll be one of those things like the Final Conflict LP where I probably passed it a million times before I actually like listened to it. Mm-hmm. And then was like, oh, this is awesome. Like why I just assumed it was like super metal. Yeah. No, I mean, I think I don't know. I mean, in our defense, the deprogram was like just going to be a digital record. So the initial photo cover was like just for like Spotify and stuff like that, and then it became a real record. But I'm happy with the record. The record looks cool. I Brian has copies at his house. I hope to get one soon, but but the regular layout, like I think we do try to be more active for a band that everyone's in California but me. We played, you know, two dozen shows or whatever. Like we try to get out there, so we got some photos to mix into this record. And Brian, like as I said, he writes great riffs, and he, you know, will do art layout and like we'll be constantly like working on like, oh, I made like posters, or I made stickers, or I made new shirt designs. Like he's, you know, has a good eye for, you know, that stuff, and I hope enjoys doing it because he does it a lot, you know. I think the record, it does. I've made jokes to people that Focalero is like the fastest song of the record, so I've like made jokes that like it's the like no pain no gain of this record, like the one straight up hardcore song on the second DYS record. But like there's other it's obviously like still a hardcore punk record. Like there's the songs are like a smidge longer, but they're not like, you know, opuses or anything. Like
they're not Neurosis long.
No, they're still all pretty short. And I recorded the vocals for this record and deprogram here in Austin. So it's also like a little bit like less stress. Like I did Boxed in California. So I flew out there, recorded the vocals, played a show, and flew home like in a weekend. So legit.
That's awesome.
So I'm glad that I didn't have to do that. But we demo everything though also. Like we record everything and you know, like practice, like I, especially boxed in, I recorded, I think I recorded like demo versions of those songs like three times just to like be like very ready to record that LP. And I think that's just like, if you have like those demos aren't released or really shouldn't be, but right. Like, you know, you, if you have the ability to do that, I think it's great for, especially cause I don't practice with them. I think it's important if you have the ability to like try recording those songs a few times, because it's not the same as recording, like practicing, where you can see all the people around you. You're just in a room by yourself with headphones when you actually have to go record that thing. Yeah. So practicing doing that, I think, is what makes recording so much easier. And for doing a band that's a recording project at its, in certain ways, recording is my least favorite part about being in a band. So, you know, that's another reason why we have to play, because it would be torture for me if all it was recording.
It takes a certain special someone to enjoy having recording projects. I think you have to be like one of these guitar virtuosos or something to that effect, or at least a singer-songwriter. To me, recording in a studio is always a means to an end. Like, okay, mm-hmm. Now you know what we sound like. Sing along at the show. It's about the show.
Yeah. And I think I'm not a perfectionist in like almost any aspect of my life. So I think recording is one of those things, especially in the moment, where I want it to be fucking over. So, but I know that I can't be good, but like I need to have someone else there to be like, do that again. You could do that better. Or like, yeah, man, you got to fix that. I need that person there. So recording without anyone else in the band there is also kind of fun for that reason, because I don't have that. But I mean, we recorded Boxed In with Jack Shirley, and that's where who recorded the music for all of them. Super chill, like nice guy. Like I enjoy, if we ever do a 7-inch, I will probably record with the rest of the band, just because like I did enjoy being around the dude and like watching the sausage get made, so to speak. But for a 12-inch, it feels like too much of a, like I want the ability to like hear their actual tracks and like practice to that. Mm-hmm. You know, because even if you demo stuff, things, tempos are going to be slightly different, you know, things are going to be a little bit tweaked. I'd rather like hear like, this is exactly what I need to sing. Like, I mean, Boxed In, I had so much lead time from the music to the vocals, mm-hmm. that it like, I really was like very rehearsed for that recording.
I think that once this record comes out, I think it's going to get different for you guys. I think this is going to be the big one. And I know that people were already very excited about, you know, the compilation record, the records before. Something, there's a special buzz going on with this one right now. It's because everyone I know is talking about it. Like, oh, this is going to be the one. Like, I don't know what it is. I think this is going to be the one, man.
I hope so. I hope you're right. I mean, we're trying to, for being a band that like, you know, as I said, I can't just go on the road all the time. But like, we're going to do 2 weeks in Europe. We're doing the Pacific Northwest twice this year for some reason. I was just talking to somebody. It's fun that we did a 4-show Pacific Northwest, and then the next shows we do are 3-show Pacific Northwest. So really hitting that market. We're talking about going to Japan. Like, we're going to try to do a few things. Like, I've never been to Japan ever, so I'm excited to do that. But yeah, like just within reason, like I'd like to get back to the East Coast. I mean, we don't have any shows in California slated at this point, so we should probably figure that out. We were supposed to, it didn't come together, but we were going to do an East Coast thing in May, but it just kind of fell apart. We'll figure out more shit, but it's just a matter of like life. And I have a mortgage and a job that I just changed. I mean, that's the other thing with me changing jobs. How long can I go without them knowing that I'm like a rocker or some shit, you know, like
right.
How long can I keep like my life incognito? But it's going to be one of those things where it's like, when I got the job, I told HR like, hey, I have like a big trip in June. So like, I need like 2 weeks off for sure. Just so you know. But I mean, where are they gonna be like, oh, where are you going? I can't be like, oh, I'm going to 14 different places. that'll be too weird.
Well, they're going to figure it out eventually. I'd say rip the Band-Aid off now.
I had to tell a dude at work that I was vegan today, because I'm like, once again, I would love to like keep that a secret, but the dude, like, they had all these donuts and I'm like, hey man, like, just between you and I, like, I'm vegan. Like, I'm not like just being rude, not trying to eat your snacks, but like, you know, here's it, it is what it is. But yeah,
in my industry, it's a mess, because, you know, plumbers and electricians and you know, these burly, a lot of Trumpy type dudes, barbecues all the time. And I'm standing there like eating like a piece of bread, or like, what, you're not hungry? It's like, no, I don't eat meat. Oh, why don't you just put cheese on that? Because I don't eat cheese. Like, trying to explain veganism to a certain subset of human beings, and I'm not trying to,
yeah,
talk badly about them, because some of them are quite nice people, but they just don't get it.
No, I mean, I don't want to like talk about it, but like, I just had to, like, the one dude, this is years ago, like, give me a bunch of shit about like, oh, but like, you know, like, you can eat grass and all this bullshit. And it's like, yo man, like, I've been fucking vegetarian since like 96. I don't know, man. Like, I'm not like some like 12-year-old who's like, oh, I'm gonna do this and like not know that like pepperoni pizza counts, you know, like yeah man, like I've been fucking vegetarian a long time. I've been vegan a fucking long time, you know, like, so what, you know? I don't know, I'm not like fucking throwing red paint on you or anything like that. Like, I'm just fucking doing my shit, you know. I don't know, I mean, there's so much of that that's just like, you know, it's like, will it come up that I like don't drink, you know? Like, I don't know, it's work. I don't know, I'd like to think that, like, I mean, I worked with plenty of people that didn't seem to, I mean, maybe they don't pay attention, but like, remember that I'm like a dude that I like, one of the doctors at the place I just worked was talking to me about going, I just went to Puerto Vallarta. It's like talking to me about like restaurants, and it's like, you know, this dude's worked with me for years. He doesn't know that I don't drink or that I'm vegan. That's fine. You know, like, I guess I'm doing a good job then by like not bringing it up. But like, yeah, with this, with switching jobs, if I didn't switch jobs, I wouldn't think twice about it. Cause I would just be like, yeah, man, going out of town. They all, like, my old boss knew what I did. And like, if I was going to go on tour or go like, constantly, like, especially last year, I feel like we did a lot of like just like impromptu two show kind of weekend. Yeah, I mean, I would just take off. Now at least I have a Monday through Friday gig, so I, you know, even just doing other, like going to a wedding and doing other, going to see my family, I'm taking off like a Friday 1 week or a Monday another week, like, you know, nothing too bad. But eventually it's gonna be a take off for like a bit, you know, maybe.
Yeah,
probably. I mean, it's 14 shows in June. We haven't really announced it, but like, we're doing that K-Town festival and that got announced. We're doing this crazy show with like Judge Integrity, Conservative Military Image, Slapshot, like, yeah, like some, like, that show is like the very end of tour, like, so like the second show of tour and the like last show of tour have been announced. So it's like, people aren't gonna assume we're like flying to Europe twice in June, but we just haven't. I mean, as I said, I don't think it's a secret, but we just haven't really, like, made a big post about going to Europe in June.
Yeah, well, this won't come out for a while anyway. Usually, I take a couple weeks. My thought for this anyway was I was going to put it out closer to when the record's going to come out, mm-hmm. just to kind of hype up the record. But I'm not going to obviously put this part in the public aspect of the show. But I need to talk to somebody else about conservative military image for a minute because they confuse me. Uh-huh. It's all tongue in cheek, right? Am I assuming correctly that they're just goofing around?
I don't know. I mean, if this is off the record,
way off the record. I'd never fuck you like
I
that.
I mean, I think the dude's like an FSU dude, so I think it's like not fully. I saw them when they played Texas,
mm-hmm.
and it's like the dude's a fucking monster. And I mean, I was just saying this to somebody. Like, I don't like a grab your shirt and yell in your face, regardless, like full stop. Like it could be a 90-pound girl or like a 260 linebacker looking dude, which is what this dude is. I don't like that. I'm not, that to me is just not fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fine. I like it more than I like skinhead as far as the two, like kind of like are these serious bands of skinhead persuasion right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really ever like throw it on per se. It's fine, but I think it's got to be a little bit of a goof, but the dude's fucking scary looking.
Yeah. I as far as like the new even skinhead adjacent stuff, because I always liked Oi. I always loved Cox Bar. My wedding song was "We're Coming Back" by Cox Bar. That's what we walked into my wedding to. I think that there's something about them that almost makes me feel like they're on the line. I'd rather listen to like, you know, the Chisel or somebody like that, a little more tuneful. But I really like the Chisel and I really like High Viz, and I know that they're not really like an Oi band, but there's something about them that almost feels mod.
Yeah. Do you like Mess?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Like that's a band that I will potentially like go to Mexico to go see. It's like on my like, me, my partner and I just went to Mexico. but like, we talked about it like, hey, like, I think it was like right around like too much shit going on, like where they did they played like Mexico City and was like, well, maybe we'll go. But we didn't pull the trigger on it. And it ended up being like an extremely hectic time in life. So I'm glad that I didn't. But I was like a dude going to the pipeline every Thursday. So like I was way in the punk shit, way in the skinhead shit. But yeah, there's a lot of it right now. And some of it's better than others. like I think if band Concrete Elite is from here, like in Austin, they just put out a new split. And I think their side of that split is like their best stuff probably. Like there's Liberty and Justice from Houston that I think those dudes are cool. And I think
they're good. Yeah.
And Ryan has other bands. Like, I think The Burden is like a little bit more like integrity, like hardcore. And he's got Trash Mags. That's also like a little different, but cool. Like there's stuff going on around here that I like, and it doesn't all have to be like the same thing. You know, it doesn't all have to be, like I said, it's not like I can say like, oh, I only like Gel. I only like Bitton Armé, you know, like I like Poison Ruin. I like, you know, I like all sorts of stuff that doesn't sound the same, you know, like High Viz, you know, they played Austin. I saw them when I was in New York. Like I'll throw the record on. I think it's cool. I curious to see what they do next, you know. I think that's like there's like just shit, there's a lot of stuff going on that's like that isn't like if they're ex-members of anybody, I don't know who they are, you know.
Yeah, not yeah, like no. They're they are, but like they were British like tough guy hardcore bands that I admittedly knew very little to nothing about, and even if I did, I probably wouldn't have liked them.
Yeah,
you know, but what they're doing now, I think it's interesting.
I mean, I think that Static Shock, like, there's a bunch of cool British shit. Like, I like listened to the Flex LP yesterday. You know, like, I think that's, and like, then I mean, that's the thing. I don't think of myself as some sort of like Anglophile, but like, I was like super big on like the UK 82, 83 type stuff. But then there's also like, you know, bands like Heresy gets the you know, everyone talks about Heresy, but like Ripcord is the one, you know?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. For sure. Absolutely.
And then after Ripcord in 96, maybe he did those two Spite records.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking great. That was like the Blind Destruction labels. It was like Restarts and Spite. And like, there was a bunch of things going on at like mid late 90s in UK, but then they did like Dumbstruck. Like, that dude just did a bunch of shit. And like, that's like all I could ever hope to be. It's just like another dude, like the dude from Ripcord, who just like has kind of one voice that he used for all those bands, but you know, like, still doing stuff even if he's not like 23 anymore, you know. I mean, the UK hardcore is like not a thing that like people make a huge deal out of, but like, you know, sometimes, no. I mean, I think that shit was cool.
It was, but like, I thought Conflict, when I was a kid especially, I thought Conflict, fucking The Sun Rose and Set to them. Oh, you know, yeah. What I mean? There's certain bands from the UK that just were ubiquitous to me. And of course, The Crass, of course, when I was a kid especially. But Conflict were the one, actually, for me, between the two, if I'm being truthful. And I know that's
for sure. Agreed.
Heresy, no, I agree, to most people. But yeah, Conflict for me, number one.
I will say that I saw Conflict at CB's, and it was fucking awful. Mm-hmm. Terrible. I like, yeah,
the one time I saw them, they sucked too.
I was like three songs in, I think I left. I was like, yep, this sucks. And it's probably like a show that I like just went to see then. And I was like, nope, I'm out of here.
Can't win them all. Yeah,
no, you can't.
But I do want to ask one more thing, though, before like we get tangential again, and I'm going to have to roll because I got to put my kid to bed. But I ask everybody this, and, you know, I don't, obviously, if you haven't noticed, we ramble. It's more of like two guys talking, getting to know one another.
Sure.
I hate interviews. I think they fucking suck. But
no, I'd rather do this style, yeah.
But I do have one question I ask everybody, because I got to have a format. And it's telling of who you are as a person. And that question is always, what is it that terrifies you on an existential level? Meaning, what is that one thing that scared you your whole fucking life that it may not even make sense, but it's one core that like freaks you the fuck out?
Ooh, all right. I mean, are we going like, like, I think the idea of drowning seems terrible. I think getting caught on fire seems terrible. Yeah, I mean, on a lighthearted note, I remember getting a banana split on 9/11 because we're like, well, we're all going to fucking die anyway. I'm not afraid of flying. Oh, you know, this is a funny, weird one. I don't have a problem in a car, per se. But like going super fast on like a motorcycle or a bicycle really fucking freaks me out. And I had motorcycles for a few years, and like, I'm game to go fucking 45 miles an hour all day long. But like the idea of going like 75 on a highway or 80 miles an hour, like,
nope.
You know, I never got used to it. Cause I had two different motorcycle accidents, and you know, that is a thing that like, even like fucking riding a bike, I don't want to go super fast. Mm-hmm. Cars, you're in a box, I don't think about it. But that's a like an embarrassing fear. People are like, oh, motorcycle, the open road. I'd much, even though it's legit much more dangerous, I'd rather zip around a city all day long. I'd rather be like in like moderate traffic and like cutting around people than like on a road with no one around it. That I think is terrifying. I mean, the thing that sucks, this is like more existential. I think that the way our country is at this point, Like, yo, I don't want to get in a fucking race war. I don't want to, I mean, in reality, I don't want to get in a class war. I think, but I feel like it's almost like at some point you're just going to encounter a fucking mass shooter at this point. Like, it feels like the odds, I mean, I probably just like the media we consume, but like, I, that's my Twitter is just fucking dark fucking shit. Mm-hmm. And that to me is terrifying. I think that's that our country is just getting more and more. No one believes anybody. Like, facts don't matter. And nothing, and people don't believe anybody. And you yourself get cynical about believing anybody. That it makes it,
I'm not sure I understand.
My watch thinks I'm talking to it, but like, there's just, it's too much. I mean, I don't know. You have children, but like, I could never want to have kids because I think the world's terrible. And I think that, you know, we have multiple wars going on at the same time. You have people that are fucking self-immolating in response to it. Yeah. You know, that, like, I don't know what could be worse than that. We spend fucking millions and billions of dollars on an industry that, you know, on guns. Like, I don't give a shit if you want to own guns. Like, legit, I'm not trying to take your guns away. But, like, I don't know, like, a reputable legal reason for, like, assault rifles.
Not one. And, there isn't. Because there isn't one.
But everyone's like, oh, like, I used to talk to a guy at my last job about, we would have like actually pretty reasonable political discourse conversations. And, you know, he's like, oh, it's a slippery slope. It's like, hey man, like, there's a lot of laws in the world, and they're not like, in your lifetime, have the speed limits gone down? You know, like, no, you know, like, you can have regulations on stuff without them actively changing, yeah. You know, like, yeah, like, your car has a seatbelt. You've had a pretty similar seatbelt in your car since the 70s. You know, you can make restrictions on things without them slowly, like, being a noose that just tightens around your neck. Like, I think if you, the individual, wants to own a shotgun, go for it. You want to own a fucking regular-ass rifle? I don't care. But if you're literally just buying weapons of war, why? If you want to go fucking do crime, I guess. But, like, don't act like it's not that.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, I remember very large swaths of time where assault rifles were not legal. Mm-hmm. It's actually kind of recent that they are.
Oh, yeah.
So at what point, like, when the Constitution was drafted, for example, when the right to bear arms came into being, we were running around with fucking muskets, bro. You know what, yeah, I mean? But how long it takes to fucking pack a musket.
But I think since the things that were passed by, I guess, Clinton, that kind of, were they, you know, the things that when they eventually expired during George Bush, I think mass shootings only went up 300%. So, yeah. So I think it's not that big a deal.
Yeah. That's all. That's all.
No, I mean, I don't know. I'm, earlier today, I was just like essentially reading my mother's Facebook about, like, I keep Facebook just to really like keep tab on my mom, my dad, but like quasi like January 6th, like supporting shit. It's like, yeah, this is like the this is the people, the world we live in, that like you can, I mean, I watched that on my phone while it was happening. Like, it was definitely a Wednesday, because I knew I was in a weekly meeting I had at my old job. It's like, yeah, like, hey, I don't know, what are we gonna sit here and talk about, like, some bullshit? Like, I think they're about to like overthrow the government.
Yeah.
And like, not in like the cool crass conflict kind of way you thought they would overthrow the government, like in like the baddies are gonna win. You know, like, it's, and it doesn't, I don't know, that to me, I work for a municipality, I want to get a pension and then like move out of this country and just live a simple life somewhere else.
Well, the big part, my big takeaway from January 6th was, holy shit, is that the guy from Iced Earth?
Yeah, is that the dude from Mr. Show? Oh no. Yeah, there's a lot of it was fucking, and then to act like it was like a peaceful demonstration. It's like, I don't know. Like, there's funny stuff because just like my mom being like, well, does that mean that like anyone who could someone from like Black Lives Matter not be allowed to run for president? You know what? If you want to make a carte blanche, like if you've been arrested for inciting a riot, you can't run for president. Okay. To me, that doesn't feel like a crazy overreach. I don't know. Sure.
Yeah, go for it. Why not? I
Let's
mean,
call it, let's be even then. Sure, great.
yeah,
Like
but
I and
I draw the line at fucking sexual assault, though. Sorry.
oh, I mean, the thing is, like, none of that, like, when the amount of things that happened with Trump's campaign, that's just like, oh, this is the one that's going to kill him. No, none of that shit matters. They don't
No.
care.
No, because he comes out and says, nope, that never happened. That's not the way it happened. And they're like, see, he said it didn't happen, so it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Have they all become, well, I'm sorry, I shouldn't even ask that question because they have. But there's a documentary, I'm sure you've seen it actually at this point. This woman, younger, talks about how her father basically started at Democrat and started watching Fox News and got completely brainwashed by Fox News. And I personally know at least three dozen people who suffer the same mania from watching Fox News. What the
But I
fuck are
mean,
they?
but there are, I mean, there are people that get just like wrapped up in a lot of causes that like you just, I mean, there are people that got super wrapped up in COVID. There are people that are super wrapped up in Palestine. There are people that are wrapped up because of like their news is their truth. Their social media, all of the media they consume is like of one thing. I mean, I had a funny as so you know, as I said, my dad's in rough shape. So I spent a week with my mom, or like 4 days with my mom last year, which the last time I spent 4 days in a row with my mom, no idea when that was, you know? And it was just funny because like she made some comment about like, oh, I'm sure, you know, the left is really up in arms about this. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. I literally have no idea what you're talking about. And then I made some reference to like Marjorie Taylor Greene. And she's like, I don't know who that is. And it's just like, okay, like that seems insane. But like the way your side paints the left and the way my side paints the right, like, I mean, I also don't, I have no idea how she wouldn't know who Marjorie Taylor Greene is. But, you know, like the things that are like just how my Twitter paints the Republican Party is insane. But I don't want to not believe that it's not insane, you know.
Right.
And the thing, I'm gonna keep fucking drinking that Kool-Aid and keep believing that they're sitting around the table with cigars being like, gentlemen, too evil, you know,
Yeah.
like, and that's what I assume it is, you know.
I'll always assume that. And, you know, I will admit I have been very wrapped up in the whole Palestine thing. Not
Oh, for sure.
in the sense that, you know, I'm out there cursing Zionists per se, or like speaking ill of Israel, but in the same token, the proof's in the pudding. There's a lot of dead Palestinians over European imperialism or
Oh, for sure.
Eurocentric imperialism. But I don't think things are definitely served up to paint a certain picture on every front, but I don't think the way the left politicizes their message is quite the same as the way the right does it. I think there's just an aspect of evil on the right
Well,
that
I
just
mean,
exists. It's nefarious, in my opinion.
oh, I agree. I mean, I don't claim to be a Middle Eastern expert, but that said, if it's not a genocide, I don't know what it is, you
Yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And if you're any, you know, conflict, 1,200 people die and your retribution is 12,000, you have to assume that like your point was well made many thousands of people ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. It's like, I don't know what the end game is from the Israeli side. And I don't think if they haven't hit if their end game is anything other than literally wiping out an entire race of people, then I don't know what else they could be going for. You know, there've been bombings of hospitals. There's tent cities that are just getting fucking littered with bullets. You know, they're like telling you this is the only safe place to go and then blowing that place up. You know, it's like with money that they get from us, that they don't need. They're not, I don't know. This is not, you know, I don't read a lot of war books as far as things go. I've read some, you know, I've read a book about like the Khmer Rouge and Pol Pot. And I've read Vietnam books and I don't really read World War II books. I read Survivor, which is like a straight up, like that dude's like fucking getting off on how good of a president George W. Bush is. Like it's clearly not my political leaning. But I read the whole book anyway. I think the wild things that'll happen in my life from a historical standpoint, whether it be Operation Desert Shield, Operation Desert into Storm, whether it be 9/11, whether it be, you know, any host like Afghan war, like the amount of wars that have taken place in our life. I don't know what just happened. Oh, there I am. Do you hear me? My headphones literally just died. My headphones is dying, if not dead. So that's another sign that we should stop. But I mean, I think there's so much that has gone on in just my 44 years that I can't imagine. And I don't think it's going to get better in the next 44 years.
It's not.
But you should buy, I think on April 7th, I'll have a new record out of Revelation Records. Yeah.
on April 7th, if you want a vacation from feeling miserable about the deplorable state we're in, buy the new Planet on a Chain.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I had a great time talking to you. When the next record comes down the pike, would you please come back on and maybe we'll talk about something a bit sunnier?
I'll come back on whenever you want. I don't need to be promoting anything. I don't care.
I appreciate that. I had fun too. Thank you so much, Dave. It was a blast.
Yeah, thank you.
Take care of yourself, my friend.
You too.